Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. Or look for us under Listen on the ESPN app.
4 hours until 7 o'clock. The other 20, that's your responsibility to do what you want to do with it. But for 4 hours, we will try to entertain you, amaze you, make you laugh, make you cry, make you think. Those are all the things that we aspire to do.
Wow.
Big. That's big plans.
Lofty plans.
Yeah. So before the show each day, I doubt that Don and Peter read it, but RJ and Andrew send us a sheet of their thoughts. Now, Andrew's just is under the guise of a list of the guests and, you know, the commercials we have to read. And RJ's, it's very high-minded. It comes out RJ's thoughts.
Yep.
And I'm sure Peter never reads it. Don might occasionally read it.
No, I've actually been reading it a lot during quarantine.
Okay, good. So he had something at the top of RJ's thoughts that really intrigued me. And we're going to talk about the baseball and the possible restarting of baseball a little bit later on. But we wanted to start with The Last Dance, the Jordan documentary. And RJ said, in this time of social media, and I'm paraphrasing because you can't really quote the great RJ.
I don't think you should paraphrase. I think you should read this whole paragraph. It's beautiful.
No, I won't. And he just said that in this time of social media and with everybody home and everybody, you know, being a little bit on edge and critical, something that is so promoted and so highly thought of before it even comes out is going to be destroyed by people. So we've been through 8 episodes of The Last Dance, and every Monday we start the show talking about it. And I don't think anybody has anything negative to say about it. Now, we might pick out certain things that we don't like, but as a concept and as a production, it is wondrously done. It's a great thing to watch. 2 hours each Sunday. It takes a lot of sports fans' minds off what's going on in the world. And, you know, again, 2 more really good ones last night. I'll give you the scoreboard so far for the first episodes. Jerry Krause looks bad. Scottie Pippen does not look good. Michael Jordan, we see exactly what a maniac he is when it comes to winning. I think Steve Kerr comes out looking good. I think Tony Kukoc comes out looking good. Phil Jackson so far has looked pretty good as well. But there's a lot of things later out there. And one of the things that jumped me was when it happened and Jordan's dad was murdered, there were rumors out there that maybe it had something to do with, you know, Jordan's gambling, and maybe he had gambling debts that weren't paid, which seemed odd because he has so much money. And that's why he insists he doesn't have a gambling problem, because he could pay off all of his debts. And, you know, it's covered in the documentary, and I now put documentary in quotes, because if anybody stepped forward and said, yeah, I really believe there was a connection, and I don't know if there is or isn't, I would bet that there probably isn't. It was probably just random, although it does seem strange that, you know, the guy just took off for South Carolina for no reason and pulled off on the side of the road because he was tired, when he's the dad of Michael Jordan and could have gone to any hotel that he wanted to. But again, you can make your own conspiracy theories. But as I'm watching this, and, you know, they act like, well, this is all cleaned up now. There's no way that there was anything untoward about this. Well, Don was saying this on our pre-show FaceTime meeting. If anybody came out and said, yeah, I think there was a connection, would it have made the cut? There's no way. This was all approved by Michael Jordan. So what Ken Burns said, and I love the 8 episodes so far, and this is just being picky about the word documentary.
Right.
If anything came out that they discovered that there could have been a connection, would it have been in that film, Don?
No, it wouldn't have been. And that's my only, really, I guess, complaint, even though it's hard to say complaint because I'm really thoroughly enjoying the 8 episodes, and I'm sure when it's all done, it's going to be just, you know, I'll look back at it very fondly as just being terrifically done and really entertaining. But I keep going back to a comment you made last week that Ken Burns says this is not a traditional documentary. He's 100% right, because whether it's a fact or not, or whether you want to just go with semantics, I believe Michael Jordan is the executive producer of this thing, because I don't believe that anything got through that he would not have allowed. I think he kind of, his voice is through this thing. And I think there's enough people, because I lived that time, Michael, you lived that time,
mm-hmm.
between the how strange it was his father was killed. And I don't buy into it's Michael Jordan's father. I know people, I'm not going to mention their names, that are very affluent people that if they're exhausted, they pull to the side of the road and take a nap. So I don't think you have to go to a 4-star hotel every time you get sleepy at the wheel. But still, I think the circumstances of his death and then immediately out of nowhere retiring, I think there's enough credible people that believe that there's something to that. And in the documentary kind of dismisses it as fake news, like complete folly, ridiculous. You're telling me that if I did a straightforward, neutral documentary, I wouldn't be able to find a couple of people that would go on record and say, I think there's something to this, and then let the audience decide what they want. But there's not one person associated with the NBA that were writing all those stories at the time that would not come forward now and say something's up with this? Not one?
Well, I mean, the most compelling piece of video they have, in my opinion, well, the two of them, they got David Stern. They interviewed him well before he passed away earlier this year. And he said it was never true that there was, you know, there was gambling connected to Jordan walking away for 18 months. And that was a year and a half suspension. And he just told him to go away. We won't announce it as suspension. And on camera, David Stern says, absolutely never was true. Absolutely will never be true. And then Brian McIntyre, who has been at the top of the NBA executive chain for a long time, said, in a word, it's total BS. Just total. He said there's no truth to it whatsoever. I've always said about conspiracy theories, if more than two people know about it, it's going to get out. Yeah. So everybody wants to be the hero that leaks something to the media. So, I mean, Stern was asked about this so many times throughout his life and always said it's absolutely untrue. So I guess that's all we have to go for. But that doesn't cover the dad issue. I mean, maybe there was something else with the dad.
But, yeah, but combined. And Michael, I don't believe it either. Like I could totally understand his father was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I could totally understand that he accomplished so much, Michael Jordan. His dad wanted him to play baseball. I can believe that, and I do believe that. What I'm just saying is, in a documentary, when there were so many stories, there isn't one voice that was willing to go on camera to say, I don't buy it. I think something's going on here. And in my opinion, I believe that if that person was interviewed, it wouldn't have made the documentary. Jordan wouldn't allow it.
Yeah, there are very few people that come out and are ripping Jordan that are in the documentary. I can't even think of one, to tell you the truth.
I'll tell you who's not an executive producer, beyond a shadow of a doubt, a Scottie Pippen.
Oh, my goodness. Are you right?
Well, he is not looking good in this throughout. And yesterday, of course, with him quitting in a playoff game, he just looked... I mean, listen, he owned it, and I guess there's not much you can do to rewrite
it.
But here's the thing that got me about owning it, right? He said, this was shocking to me.
I know. Yeah. I know what you're going to say.
If I had to do it again, I'd do the same thing.
Right.
And I remember something that Buck Showalter once told me. He said, when you ask a manager, would you do the same thing again, and it didn't work out, and he says, I'd do the same thing again, well, he's an idiot. Why would you do the same thing again if it didn't work out? Why would Scottie Pippen go on camera and say, I would do it all over again?
Because I believe in his heart of hearts, he still thinks he did the right thing.
Oh, there's no way.
Then why would he say he did the right thing? Then all he could do, he's got Jordan basically saying Scottie should have known better. His teammates, he apologized.
Bill Cartwright aired him out. Them. You can see on the bench.
Right. But all to a man, you know, said they, Kerr said they moved on and they forgot about it. They all did. Grant said the same thing. It's like, all right, we forgave him. That's not how Scottie is.
But let's look at the stuff with Scottie. He didn't go in a playoff game because the play wasn't called for him, baby. He didn't go into a playoff game because he had a migraine headache. He wouldn't continue the game. And nobody could say whether he had a bad headache or not. And then... He completely quit on the team and had surgery because he was underpaid.
Right.
I mean, it does not make him look good. And, you know, after the show last night on SVP, you know, Jackie McMullen and Michael Wilbon, you know, they're singing the praises of Scottie Pippen. He was a great, nobody's denying he's a great player. But when you're looking for warts on people, those are major, major warts with hair coming out of them. I mean, those are three bad things to have on your resume.
But just to say he'd do it again, I was just blown away by it. So he must just be saying all the right things because he just comes across as so bad. But at the end of the day, I would do it again. It kind of reminded me of, because Mark Gastineau had an unnecessary roughness play in that divisional round against the Browns that led to that huge comeback when the Jets lost the chance to go to the championship game. And I interviewed him at some Jet draft party years ago, and I asked him about that play, and he said, my job was to sack the quarterback. I don't regret what I did. And I'm like, how do you not regret it? It led to one of the biggest collapses in NFL history. I was like, I was blown away. But I guess his ego just wouldn't allow him to admit that he screwed up. And I guess Scotty just won't admit that when it came down to it, that what he did was 100% completely wrong. How do you not just say, hey, I screwed up. My emotions, my ego got the better of me. I wish it never happened. But to say in something that everybody in the world of basketball is watching, I'd do it again.
Yeah, and right after he said that he knew it wasn't a good thing to do.
Right.
Like, I knew it was the wrong thing to do. It's one of those things that
But I'd do it again.
But I
it makes no sense.
It was... Maybe he's just saying he knows himself so well that even though it's unfortunate, he just knows that's how he's wired. But I'll tell you, Don, I agree with your sentiment about there's no way to watch The Last Dance and not think about the fact that Jordan got his eyes on this. And while I agree with that, I will say this. I thought Jordan has come off over the last four episodes to be maniacal and just downright mean many times, and also on the flip side to your point, also much more interesting than I ever gave him credit for. Like, and that's why I see what you're saying, because in that sense he does come off good. Like, I never thought of Jordan as being this really captivating, flawed yin yang kind of guy. And last night, between how mean he was, the punching Kerr in the face, and then the weeping on the ground when his father died. I mean, I'd seen that video of him. The visual of him on the ground. I'd never heard the absolute moaning and weeping of him on the floor like that. I thought it was absolutely fascinating to see how different a guy he is.
I just think that the difference between Jordan and LeBron that always comes up when we debate who's the better basketball player is Jordan's will to do anything to win. And I think that's the message that he's cool with getting out there from this documentary. That even the times he looks bad, he still did it to win. And he wants to get that out, that I will do anything. I will humiliate my teammates. I will come up with fraudulent ways to motivate myself. Out and out lies about the opponent just to be able to motivate myself to win. Because I think that's the one thing that he hangs his hat on is that he's the greatest basketball player and had a will to win that can't be matched by anybody on the face of the
earth. That was scary, though, about I forget the player's name, the young player that went off on him in Cleveland.
In Washington.
In Washington. And so the game was in Chicago. It just completely lit him up. And then Jordan told people, the guy said, nice game, Mike, and that set him off. And then he went off the next game. They had a home and home. The next game was in D.C., and he destroyed the guy. So the guy had 36 points in the game in Chicago. Jordan had 36 in the first half. And then he admitted afterward that he made it up. He made stuff up to himself to motivate himself. I mean, maniacal drive. And I know it did work for him. But there are things in this documentary that jump out at me. Like, he's wearing 45 in the first game against Orlando. And then they lose that game. Next day he comes out in 23. That wouldn't be allowed anymore. You know what the rule is? If you want to change your number, you have to buy every single shred of merchandise that's out there with that number on it. And there were over like 40,000 shirts that had been sold with 45. He didn't have to do that. But if somebody wanted to change it now, they'd have to buy everything that had been produced and buy it at retail price. That's one thing. The second thing that got me, we used to always have the Jordan crying meme. Now we have even better memes from him. The look on his face when the comments by Gary Payton are played. I mean, just laughing at Gary Payton. And the one thing that you get about Jordan, he's wired in a way that we can't even begin to understand, so we shouldn't even be criticizing it. He can never admit that anybody got the better of him. He could not even throw a crumb out to Gary Payton, whose team lost. That, you know,
and
in games 4 and 5, yeah, maybe he did wear me down. He laughed at it.
And all Peyton said was, I don't know if we would have won the series, but I could see that the series felt different. That's all he said.
Right, and Jordan laughed at it. I never had a problem with the glove.
I mean, no, he
just
cracked
like he
up.
He will not give credit to anybody.
Even the way he just seemed to take such pride in eviscerating poor B.J. Armstrong.
Right.
mean, he's a former teammate. They were going to win that series anyway. So he had the game of his life in game two. And then he got the better of me that day, but not the rest of the series. Like, and he just like just took tremendous pride. Like, that wasn't going to happen anyway. That's that, I guess that's the thing that blows me away, is to try to find ways to motivate himself when it's not even necessary to do it.
Now, I'm going to tell you, I've always thought this, and I think it was accentuated by a couple of people in the show yesterday. Jordan, at the age of 31, having not picked up a bat for 13 years, starts to play baseball and doesn't start out at rookie ball. He starts out at double A. And I've had players tell me the toughest level other than the big leagues is double A.
Why is that?
Because triple A, you've got some veteran guys that are on the way down. You've got some fringe guys that aren't good enough to get up. They put their best prospects to really start to percolate in double A.
Okay.
So they put him in double A simply because lower level minor league teams would have not had the facilities to handle the media crush. The guy hit 202. He drove in 50 runs. So when people laugh and go, he never would have made the big leagues. First of all, he would have made the big leagues because Jerry Reinsdorf is brilliant and would have realized what Jordan meant playing at Comiskey Park. And number two, he probably could have earned his way there. Michael Jordan has done more, did more at the age of 31, having not played baseball for 13 years, than Tim Tebow has ever done in the Met organization. Just think about that, the ability to do that. He had not seen a curveball, a professional curveball, his whole life. And, of course, he starts off the minor leagues hitting in 13 straight games. So he's able to turn on fastballs. When they start throwing him breaking balls, he has trouble. But if he, as Terry Francona said, you give him 1,500 at-bats in the minors, which is essentially 3 years, he's going to make the big leagues. Now, he'd have his age go against him. He'd be 34 years old. But still, there would be a value to having Michael Jordan being on your team. That shows you how otherworldly this guy was. People don't realize. I've always said it. People argue with me. There's no harder thing to do in professional sports than to hit a baseball. And this guy was doing it. And then, how menacing was he after they lose that game to B.J. Armstrong? And he's in the locker room with the bat and the cigar. Like, oh my goodness, this guy is wired like we can't even appreciate. I think I'm like vindictive and I'm driven. I can't even scratch the surface of Michael Jordan.
Michael, picture this. If Tim Tebow, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when he started with the Mets, imagine the fanfare if Tebow had started with a 13-game hit streak.
Oh, he might have been called up.
And that was Tim Tebow. The fact that Jordan went there with eyeballs like that, and I thought it was fascinating that the reason he went to Birmingham was because they simply couldn't facilitate the media request that would have been required if he played rookie or single A ball, and then to go up there and be that solid a player, it's baffling.
It is. There's so many layers to the stories yesterday, and the 72-win season, then coming back the way he did, and he wasn't in basketball shape, and then he loses, and that drives he starts a film Space Jam and has a gym built for him and is up at 6 in the morning of casting call, and then he works till 7 and then plays for 3 hours against the best players in the NBA and then works out after that and starts all over again and comes back in the best shape of his life. This guy's like robotic in his pursuit of greatness. This greatness didn't happen by accident. He pursued it. He wanted it. He grabbed it by the throat. Because I'm sure that there are people that might be more athletic than Michael Jordan, but this guy had everything going for him because of the way he was wired. I've been around great players because I've covered the Yankees for 30 years. I can't think of anybody that's close to that. Anybody that had that kind of drive. Jeter had drive, but he was never mean to his teammates. And one other thing. Last Friday, I said, why wouldn't Horace Grant, when Jordan denied him food, just punch the guy in the mouth? Then you say, oh, you can't do that. It's Jordan. Steve Kerr did it, and then Jordan socked him in the eye. But you know what? As Steve Kerr said, I got his attention, and we were great after that. Horace Grant never got his attention because he allowed him to pick on him.
But is it necessary?
Necessary for Kerr. He would have continued way with Kerr.
No, what I'm saying is was it necessary for Jordan to be that way? Like, we hear stories of players.
To be great,
that,
I think it was.
That. But you just described what an amazing athlete he was. So
yeah, but they're probably better athletes.
I just, It's just so strange that, and because, and the other part of it too, that I don't know if you bought it, that he did this because he wanted the best for him and his team, or did he just want the best for himself?
Both.
Like, did he really want the team to do well, or did he feel, I need these guys so that I can become the best?
I'm fascinated by the guy. As Peter said, I don't know if he comes off as likable, but he is interesting. I don't know if we've ever thought he was interesting before.
Yeah, I think
it's been terrific. It's been fascinating. And it was just my observation that I just wonder how involved he is, because I think at the end of the day, the message, how you feel about Michael Jordan, is how he wants you to feel about him.
Yeah, that's a good point. This is all orchestrated by him. He had the tapes. Does this get made without the tapes?
Right.
And would I trade no involvement by Michael? No. I'd rather not see it if Michael wasn't involved. I'd rather not see it. So, yeah, I would make the trade. And, you know, we're getting somewhat of a homogenized version. But he is showing sides of himself that aren't pretty.
Yeah. And the people that he wants you to look bad at, I think that was his intent as well.
It's also interesting. I don't know if you heard this, Peter. Pippen has not commented on this. Everybody else that's been like a player in here, Barkley went on, every single show. George Karl's going on every single show. Everybody's done everything. Steve Kerr has done a lot of stuff. Pippen has kept his mouth shut. So maybe after he saw it, he goes, I'm not looking good on this.
It's weird, especially considering he works for ESPN.
Yeah.
The fact that he's never popped up on SVP on one of those sports centers, nothing.
I wonder if SVP is going to get Jordan after the last one on Sunday.
You'd think so, right?
I would think.
I'll tell you what, though, man. It is hard to not enjoy. It is like, no matter how you look at it, subjective, objective, whatever.
And
pure entertainment, man.
And this is obviously coming from a very biased place, because you know how I feel about the NBA today and how I felt about it back in the day. I'm enjoying it because that's the NBA I loved. That's the NBA that really got me into it. Like, it's so surprising. Like, and they're going through, like, I can almost like name all those guys on the Orlando Magic, right? I mean, the team that went to the final in '95, Nick Anderson and Shaq and Horace Grant and Penny Hardaway. That was maybe just because it was that time in my life and what I was doing with my career and everything. But that brings back so many good memories for me, because boy, I loved the NBA back then.
All right, before we break, I want to just throw this out to Don and Peter, and obviously everyone listening as well. So the reason Jordan leaves baseball in March of 1995 is because they were going with replacement players. And they asked a lot of players in the minors to be parts of those teams. And Jordan said no, he wouldn't do it, which was the right thing for him to do. If there was never a strike and there were never replacement players, would he have gone back to play basketball in March? Or was he going to go back again for second year with the Birmingham Barons? I wonder.
I don't think he would have went back to the NBA when he did. I think he would have finished out the season.
No, he did finish out the season.
No, I mean, if there were no strike,
right?
He would have played baseball. He would have played that season, I think.
You think he would have played that season and gone back the next year?
Yes.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Yeah.
Catch the show on demand whenever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. It's me. I'm back. And guess what? It's another Don segment.
We're doing the list, Michael. I don't care if you don't like it.
The Daily Don.
I'll fight to the death for this list.
It's the Daily Don Show. He makes lists.
Take it away, Donnie.
Of course, last night's first episode, episode 7 of The Last Dance, had a lot about Michael Jordan's father being murdered and then subsequently him leaving the sport for a year and a half.
Top 5 celebrity murders?
No.
Okay.
Top 5 New York sports conspiracy theories.
I've got number 1.
I think Michael has number 1, yes.
The frozen envelope.
That's right. The frozen envelope is number 1 for those new to sports. Back in 1985, Patrick Ewing was the best college basketball player in the world, coming out of Georgetown. And many believe that the NBA was hot to get him in a big-time market. So with the Knicks in the draft lottery, The story goes that the envelope containing the Knicks' name was frozen, so when David Stern stuck his hand in, he would feel for the frozen envelope that would get the Knicks Patrick Ewing. Do you believe that conspiracy theory?
I don't.
I don't think I believe it either, honestly. I never think the leagues care as much about certain markets and teams as people think they do.
I don't think they care necessarily, like, trying to get them into the finals and all that, but I do think sometimes there's a special player and you're like, we got to make sure this guy is in a big market. But to go as far as that, to make sure everybody stays mum and not talked about it, I don't know. I'm with you guys. I don't think I believe it, but it's there and it's number one. The other four are kind of up for grabs, though, because that's a big one, right?
I think I have one.
Yeah, I don't know if I can think of any. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, I mean, it's not a conspiracy theory anymore because it's been proven. You know, the Giants stealing signs in 1951.
Yeah, I've got that at number four, basically because I think it's been proven that it actually happened, but that Bobby Thompson knew what pitch was coming from Ralph Branca because there was a telescope in center field, and they were able to steal the sign when Thompson hit the shot heard around the world. But you're right, Michael. I think a lot is pointed to the fact that that's almost been proven right, which is rare for conspiracy theory. What's so funny?
DiPietro just texted me his conspiracy theory in New York.
What's that?
Can it be revealed?
Yeah.
Can you Peter is
Peter is Tim McCarthy's illegitimate son. Only way the hire makes sense.
I honestly think that's good, but Peter, the laugh I think is somewhat revealing from Michael.
Yeah, how much he actually feels that in his soul.
It was almost like Jordan's laugh about the glove.
Now, there was a lot of controversy around an event that happened last night in New York. It's on my YouTube and my Instagram, Rosenberg Radio on Instagram, or you can just search Hot Dog Chicken Showdown on YouTube.
Okay.
A lot of controversy. We finally had the Bear Hot Dog Chicken Showdown, and Bear ended up going with Hot Dog, and a lot of people believe there's controversy there. But it was a 100% legitimate pick.
I would have bet chicken.
You would have bet chicken?
Yeah.
Well, the big controversy was, if you watch on my Instagram, Don, when Bear got the hot dog in his mouth, I got so excited. Actually, you know what, RJ? We're going to need a clip of me screaming hot dog. I screamed hot dog so loud that I terrified Bear, and the hot dog went flying out of his mouth.
But he still
in the end picked up the hot dog first.
It's not in the top five, but I think it's terrific.
It didn't make it? All right. Don, can you give me a hint on sports, please?
Of the ones we have left.
Three
of them, the ones that we have left. One is baseball, the other two, one is football. The other one's kind of football adjacent, but it's pretty much football.
That's only two.
I said one's baseball.
Oh, one's baseball, one's football.
And the other one is pretty much football, but kind of football adjacent, but it's people think of it as football.
How recent? Any of them very recent?
Do you want me to give you the dates?
Yeah.
I won't give you the sport, but I'll give you the dates. 2014, 1975, 1969.
The Black Cat?
No.
With the Mets against the Cubs?
Well, you think somebody released the Black Cat just to jinx the Cubs? That's,
well, you know
that's
what?
Beyond
that's
conspiracy
when they
theory.
Fell off the
that's
cliff.
Almost like witchcraft. No,
69, maybe it was could be the something with the Jets.
68 season, 69. What?
That the Super Bowl was fixed.
That's right. Colts threw Super Bowl III. In Bubba Smith's autobiography, Kill Bubba Kill.
That's the title of my 25th book.
K, kill K?
Yeah, kill K,
or
kill.
Or kill K, yeah. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Kill K, kill. He said in his book that he believed that it was a New York bookmaker in the NFL that planned the fix. He said that five times the Colts were in the red zone, came away with no points. He believed Earl Morrill was in on it.
Wow.
Don Shula said it was too ridiculous for me to comment on. But Bubba Smith continued to claim, and he was on the team, that the game was thrown. I don't buy it because, again, the merger was already done, so I'm not sure what would have been accomplished there unless it was just a straight money grab for the fix. But that is number two on the list.
So 2014, let's is it involved Matt Harvey not showing up at a playoff game?
No. I just think Matt Harvey didn't show up at a playoff game. I don't think there's any conspiracy theory.
I was thinking the Mets was 2014, but I couldn't think of...
Well, you probably don't realize that it is, and I looked it up, people talk about it. It's not a strong one. It's number five, but you called it, Michael. It's one of your great calls of all time.
One of my great calls. Wow, there's so many Michael to choose.
Yeah, it's hard. He 2014
well, how many
alone.
Of them are 2014? You're so great that there's multiple ones each year.
Yeah.
It's on the top five.
And it's a conspiracy?
That's
conspiracy
right.
Conspiracy theory? In 2014.
That's right.
So Jeter's last hit?
Yes. There is
that Buck allowed theory it?
That it was, oh yeah, that's right.
That Evan Meek of the Baltimore Orioles threw a cookie to Derek Jeter so he can get a hit in his final at bat at Yankee Stadium. Now, I looked at it. I mean, it's hard. He wasn't that great a pitcher anyway. And he did swing at the first pitch, so it's really hard to say the entire at bat, like to really rate the pitches. But there are people that believe that Meek just served him up a cookie. You never heard that?
Never.
Peter?
I mean, there's some people that say that Showalter in a game that really mattered, because the Orioles had already nailed down a playoff spot, would have walked Jeter. You wouldn't have pitched to him there.
That's number five.
What kind
and
of
bizarre... there's one more that's a football adjace one.
A football adjace. It's pretty big, though, but you don't think about like an actual game, but just something involving a stadium.
That Jimmy Hoffa was buried
right.
in the end zone.
Number three, that Jimmy Hoffa was buried at the old Giants Stadium. Now, Hoffa was last seen on July 30th, 1975 in Detroit. The stadium was obviously under construction at that time in East Rutherford, New Jersey. In an interview in Playboy magazine, Donald Tony the Greek Frankus told the story that Hoffa was buried in Section 107 of Giants Stadium. The FBI has denied it, and there was even no thought of searching the rubble when it was finally torn down because they just did not buy into this theory. But it was a big deal at the time, and it resonated pretty much until it was, I guess, proven wrong, Michael, because they never found any remains when they tore it down. But now, that was a major conspiracy theory for a long time.
I need a read from you on something, Don, because we've been doing this for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Does Peter, in fact, get paid for this segment that we just did?
That was bad.
He gets paid for every segment. I really thought this was imaginative.
It was. This is not a list I have a problem with. Michael, just like you don't like the quizzes, I'm not smart. Digging into my brain this way does not work.
I don't like the quizzes because I'm not smart. I mean, I'm brilliant. I'm just not a trivia guy.
I know the Hoffa thing.
I'm not a list guy.
The disadvantage Peter is in is that a lot of these, especially when I do the New York-centric ones, because he's not from here and doesn't root for New York teams, that some of these things don't resonate as much as they would with Michael or with me or with the audience. But when I have national ones, I mean, you're right
there.
Yeah,
I'm all in.
No, I'm just saying, I wonder if he gets paid for that segment. He didn't really lend anything to it.
Well, you know what? I think you should
for the trivia.
Write an email to management and suggest I get docked for this one.
No, I don't even want to bring it up.
But I think it's all about effort. He couldn't come up with one.
Did I seem like I wasn't trying or caring?
No,
well,
I thought you
said
tried.
Nothing. I'm just saying.
I didn't say nothing. I said more this segment than the last one.
Like if this was a show about juggling cats, right? And you couldn't juggle cats, then I don't think it should be paid.
But if you were a good teammate, Michael, you could have given the Ewing one because that's the one that he knew.
Exactly.
He did not know that one.
That's a known one. That I would kill him if he didn't know that.
But yeah, but
you know,
honestly,
Casey
of course,
Stengel
I
years ago.
But of course, I know the Ewing one. But what I thought of it, I don't know.
He's dead. You're not helping my argument. And you know what?
I'm just being honest.
We got the bear story about the hot dog. We wouldn't have gotten
that
otherwise.
That happened.
Wait, we got to hear that again.
Hot dog.
This is a.
RJ,
no, that's a drop that maybe doesn't happen if not for this listener.
That's
worth getting paid right there. And I don't remember we got paid per segment. I don't have that in my contract.
By the way, Don, do you realize how useful that drop can be in so many conversations?
The whole thing is unsettling to me. I didn't even know this was going on. Hot dog versus what?
It was the hot dog chicken showdown. It happened because...
So he does not ascribe or subscribe to Marshawn Lynch.
Take care of y'all chicken.
Yeah, he doesn't. He takes care of his little hot dog.
Take care of y'all chicken.
But he still ended up, I gave him a little piece of chicken also. But it happened because a few months ago when Stat Guy Greg, my co-host on Cheap Heat, was over...
Is that his real name?
His real name is Stat Guy Greg. Yep. First name Stat Guy, last name Greg.
Any name is possible after you see what Elon Musk called his kid.
Good point.
What was that?
I can't even... It's unpronounceable.
Yeah, but I don't think that's the name. I think that's their fake name for the public.
Oh, really?
Look at you.
That could be a conspiracy theory.
I don't even know what the whole deal is with Elon Musk. I don't like him.
So you don't even know if this kid actually exists?
I think the kid exists. I think the name is fake.
But you can't pronounce it?
It's like symbols and stuff. It's almost like what Prince became. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show? Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. Today, two opponents enter.
I hate Don.
I'm Don LaGreca, sidekick to Michael K.
Only one makes it out.
Let's go with Don!
Who will win this deadly competition where the standings don't matter?
What?
We find out.
Okay.
In the latest edition of Last One Standing.
I'm excited about today.
Really?
Yeah, I really am.
Never heard that before.
Yeah, I am.
Here's what I want to do today. First of all, I want to welcome everyone to Last One Standing. It's everyone's favorite segment. The ratings are in. The ENN remains the most popular segment on the show. Second most popular, Last One Standing.
That's not true.
Third.
That's simply not true.
Third, any other segment that I'm involved in. And then everything else.
I guess the last segment didn't do very well.
Exactly. You'll see. It'll be in the toilet. I believe the question. Andrew does a tremendous job.
Oh yeah,
tremendous, and he puts in more work to this game than I do.
This is the start of something that usually you'd say, "No, please don't take offense to this," but
that, yeah, what you just said. We're low on questions. I believe we need. Andrew's very stubborn. He refuses to copy questions from any other random trivia. He insists that he invent the trivia.
I try every day.
Why don't you get him to cut and paste the trivia? Because then he'd do it easily.
See? But that's all I want him to do. Oh, my God. Isn't that ironic? All I want him to do is cut and paste, and he won't do it.
No, because I've had it.
And so I feel like we're kind of low. These questions are all...
Well, I'll bail on the first question if you want. Save you.
No, what I think I'm going to do is, for today, I'm going to jump down, and we're going to do a best of three categories.
Okay.
First to win two, and what they're going to be is I will name the category. You guys go back and forth naming players, and whoever stops, it's finished.
Oh, I enjoy this.
And I'm maxing it out, guys. You get 7 seconds. Seven seconds.
All right.
Okay? And after that, RJ's going to hit a buzzer, and that's it. We got to move
on. And then that's it. No, give me an answer.
No, you can give the answer right then, but if you hesitate, it's over.
All right. I'll leave it up to you.
Are you guys ready?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess.
Who's going first?
Michael's up first.
Okay.
We're going to start with players who have led the Mets in home runs in a season since 1980.
Ooh, since 1980.
Each player can only be said one time.
Okay.
Michael, begin. You have 7 seconds.
Daryl Strawberry.
Pete Alonso.
Yes.
David Wright.
Yes.
Dave Kingman.
Yes.
Whoa. That not after 1980.
Yes.
No way.
Continue on. Yes.
Oh. Robin Ventura.
Mike Piazza. What?
Ventura's not on there, right?
Ventura's not on there. Michael's out. Oh, game over.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Some really tremendous names you missed. Lucas Duda, of course. Conforto, Jay Bruce, Cespedes. That's incorrect. Ike Davis, Daniel Murphy, Beltran three times, Cliff Floyd.
Ed Cranepool.
Again, not Ed Cranepool. Bobby Bonilla would have done the trick for you.
What year was
Gary
Kingman
Carter,
one?
Mike Piazza? I'm sorry?
What year was Kingman, please?
There were two of them, so I don't know which.
Probably.
Early.
Yeah, it had to be very early.
You said from 1980 on, right?
Correct.
Right.
Let me take a look at this.
Oh, my God.
You're not trusting Andrew.
No, I
probably did it.
Andrew
in 80.
Screwed up consistently on this.
Oh, my
God. I believe in societal norms.
By the way, Andrew would be very excited. Actually, let's bring on Andrew real quick while you're looking, Michael. Andrew would be thrilled to look at the weather outside my window right now. It's very dark and interesting. Andrew, you there? Oh, he's not there. Sorry. He must be busy. Too busy for last one standing. All right, we have to move on, Michael.
Oh, he had two separate stints with the Mets, Don. 75-77, 81-83.
So now you look like a fool. You have pie all over your face.
Probably did an 80-82.
Just take the L.
That's right. All right, Don is up 1-0. Next category. You guys ready?
Yes. Yeah. And then who goes first? Is it still Michael? Or do I go first?
Yeah, no, let's let Michael go first each time.
Okay.
Today's his day.
Sure.
College basketball coaches who have won a title since the year 2000. Michael, you're first.
Mike Krzyzewski.
John Calipari.
Also correct.
Roy Williams.
Correct.
Oh, my God. Why am I vegging on his name? The Villanova coach. Handsome.
Very handsome.
Three.
Jay Wright.
Two.
See, now he threw me off because of that. Bill Self.
Yes. Good job.
Oh, no. Now I'm going to run out here, guys.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
Dig deep. Three.
Tom Izzo.
Two.
It's going to be wrong.
That is correct.
Ah!
I think he did in 2000, right?
That's great.
Oh.
Good job.
Now, I don't know if you're going to use this, but he did win, Rick Pitino.
That's
been
correct.
Vacated, but he won.
Correct.
And you said Roy Williams, right? That's been out there?
Yeah, I did say that. Thanks.
Oh, we relax.
God, I love this game.
It's over.
Three. No, it's not done. Come on. Think.
Two.
Come on. One.
What's the UConn coach?
It's over.
I guess you're thinking of the name Kevin Ollie, aren't you?
No, he wasn't. He was thinking of Jim Calhoun.
Yeah,
also on there. But Don, who did we talk about in our meeting today?
Oh, yeah. Well,
who?
Jim Boeheim.
That's right.
Sitting right there.
Oh, he lost in 96, Boeheim, right?
But the other big name you guys left out, if there was one, would be Billy Donovan.
Okay.
Twice he won.
I think I got it right there. All right, so we got a rubber match. Let's go.
It's 1-1. What a start. And this next category is hard, but if you think, it's all the information's in your head. It's just, will you get it right?
Right.
Here we go, guys. Let's stick with the theme of since a certain year, and let's stick with the theme of The Last Dance. Let's go for our final category today. Players to lead the NBA in scoring since 1990. Michael, you're up first.
Michael Jordan.
Correct.
Karl Malone.
It's over. Michael wins.
Oh,
what an embarrassing, disgraceful, horrifying.
You know, because I thought there was some other thing that we did, Carl.
I don't know how you get up from this.
He was the MVP.
Right.
And I think that's where I got confused.
Now, Don, let's just for fun stay here. If it had come back to you, what would you have guessed next?
So LeBron James.
Sure. That's a good one. What else?
Why would you go with that instead of...
Yeah, what else? What else, Don? No, this is the funny part. I want to see how many he has. What else you got?
Well, you're putting all the pressure on me, but I guess no more than we had before.
How about you throw out some of the most obvious possible things in your mind?
How about a little Kobe?
Oh, sure. What else you got?
I don't know. He'll be throwing out names. I think I had that work with Karl Malone.
How about Kevin Durant? Heard of him?
Yeah, I've heard of Kevin Durant.
How about Jim Harden? You familiar?
Yes.
How about Steph Curry? These are some of the challenging names. Carmelo Anthony, Russell Westbrook, D. Wade, Shaq, Iverson, McGrady, David Robinson. But you, my friend, went straight to Karl Malone. Michael gets the win on a Monday. That was fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and- because it was, again, because I just got confused because he won the MVP.
You have a thing for Karl Malone. You threw it out last
time. Always has.
Yeah, you're a big Malone. You love the mailman.
There are I know more Orlando Magic from 95 than I know the entire NBA today.
By the way, come back. Go ahead.
Best nickname conversation, though, because you've only did we do a local nickname? Yeah, we did. If you did a national nickname, like really solid, I think the mailman's up there. I think it's in the top five.
That's a really good one.
That was a bad performance by you.
How does he move on from this?
But you know, in fairness to Don, you really don't go hockey very often. He would dominate that.
No, because Andrew hates me. Or only cares about the NBA.
You know what? Well, guess what? The next time, later this week, we'll do another one of these, and I have a big old sexy hockey category for you. And it's one, Michael, that you could play in a little. I think you can hang, but it'll favor him the way this would have favored you.
Let's do that hockey.
For more than 80 years, Nissan has been there for you. And now is no different. We're offering flexible payment options for current NMAC customers. Our service departments are here to help. And for future owners, we're now offering more help. Deferred payments for 3 months on 11 models. Plus, we'll cover your payments for up to 2 additional months. Plus, get 0% APR financing for up to 60 months on 10 models. This is help when you need it. Visit NissanUSA.com today to learn more. Nissan, innovation that excites. Offers available to well-qualified buyers on purchase of an eligible 2020 Nissan from new dealer stock when financed through Nissan Motor Acceptance Corporation. Subject to NMAC credit approval and max term limit. Subject to residency restrictions. NMAC special APR cash amount is capped and varies by vehicle from $500 to $2,000, which customer can apply toward up to 2 monthly payments. Customer is responsible for all payments. Delayed payment must begin 90 days from date of contract. Accrual of interest commences from contract date and consumer responsible for accrued interest. Dealer participation may vary. Call 1-888-858-8319 for offer details, including list of eligible models and service availability. Offers end 6-120.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Yeah.
Catch the show on demand whenever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast. This is the Michael K. Show.
Major League Baseball is ready at this point to go to players and say, we will give you a share of the money that is coming into the league this year.
It's two parties that are rich arguing over a pot of money.
Major League Baseball as an uncapped sport has never had a revenue split.
What an awful look this would be if these two sides have an open warfare when it comes to money. It has to be done in a different way. It will have a scarring effect on the sport for years to come.
This is the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN.
All right, we've talked about the developing story surrounding baseball. The owners seem to have come to an agreement amongst themselves about the proposal to present to the Players Association tomorrow. And I'll do it very quickly. 78 to 82 games, all within the division, interleague game within the division that's across from you. East will play East, Central will play Central, West will play West. There'll be a roster of about 30 players per team, with 20 players being on a taxi squad. Now, there's some maneuverability about maybe putting more games, more doubleheaders, something like that, because the more games you play, the more money the players could make. Now, the players believe, let's just put the number at 81 because that's easy math, that if they play 81 games, that should be it. They'll get half of the salary that they were due to earn in 2020. And I'll make it easy with Gerrit Cole, although it's not Gerrit talking. He was scheduled to earn $36 million. He wants 18. The owners are saying, listen, we play 81 games. We're going to play in front of no fans. 30 to 40% of our revenue is derived from the gate. We can't pay you dollar to dollar of what you'd be making prorated just according to the games. You also have to give us some relief because we're not going to be making the money that we thought we'd be making. The players and the owners historically have not trusted each other. So the owners have said, we'll give you 50% of the revenue. Now, the problem is, do the players want to do that? Because do they trust the numbers that the owners will give them? And I would think that if they have to look at the numbers the owners are giving them, that's going to take an awful long time to actually decipher what 50% of that is. And I think the greatest sticking point when it comes to money is this. The players are afraid that if they accept revenue sharing, which is what every other sport has, that the owners will make it a thing in the next collective bargaining agreement. Here's an easy way for the owners to just cut that off at the pass. Under no circumstances will we propose revenue sharing in the next collective bargaining agreement, which will be negotiated following the 2021 season. That puts it to bed, right? Now, the problem I have is if either side looks at this awful time in our country's history, forget about sports, in our country's history, to get a leg up on the next CBA, shame on them. It shouldn't be about that. It should be about getting the sport on the field right now. I mean, the Yankee president, Randy Levine, called the players patriots to make this work for the country. Now, I'm not so naive as to think that everybody wants to take the field and the owners want to restart the game just for the good of the country. I would say that that's an offshoot, but it should be an important offshoot. Now, no one should take a bath financially. I get that. They're not doing this for charity. But to bend a little bit for the charity of making a sport available for the country, that shouldn't be that tough of a call. Now, I'm not saying this is the only impediment, because we read you the tweets by Sean Doolittle of the Nationals. They're worried about their health. What happens if? What happens if? How are you going to contain everybody? Well, they've gotten away from the Arizona bubble proposal. They're not going to do that. This is about each team playing in their home ballpark. And when spring training starts, each team will have the opportunity to decide to play in their own ballpark or go down to Florida or go to Arizona and train at their facilities. Now, playing in your own ballpark, I don't know what that's going to do. They'll throw the ball around. They only have one field. They have some batting cages. And who are they going to play? I guess they're going to play each other in inter-squad games. Maybe the Yankees could play the Mets. But I would say the best way to get close to a real spring training would be to go to Florida or go to Arizona. But again, that's going to entail a lot of players traveling, going into hotels. Especially if you're at home and you train at home, you're at home. You don't have to worry about the bellhop. You don't have to worry about the person preparing your meals in the hotel. You don't have to worry about the front desk concierge. You don't have to worry about that. So there's so many things to be solved. So what I would send out as a warning to everybody listening to us, just because the proposal is there, don't think that it's imminent. There are so many hurdles from which to jump, just so many that sometimes when I sit down, Don and Peter, and I think about the hurdles that have to be jumped for all sports to restart, I get depressed. So that's why I don't want to sit there and accentuate the negative. But there are a lot of negatives, a lot of speed bumps that you have to get over in order to start.
Now, you outlined all of Sean Doolittle's concerns, all right?
Mm-hmm.
That the damage you can do to people that survive coronavirus, yes, 80%, they can manage it, but there's 20% that really get devastated by this and all that. What I would ask Sean is, these are your concerns on May 11th. Do you think those concerns are going to go away a year from now? Like, until we get a vaccine, those concerns are all going to be on the table. So it's not a matter of how much am I going to get paid. It's a matter of whether you should play or not. Because if you're going to tell me, hey, listen, I'm not going to take a risk if you're going to take a percentage of my money away. But if you're not going to take a percentage of my money away, then I'm willing to take the risk. Hey, that's something a guy's got to make a decision about when he's got to put food on the table. But for a lot of these multi-million dollar ball players, Michael, it's not going to fly with the general public that You don't want to go because of safety issues, because they're going to take a percentage of your salary. But if they're not going to take the percentage of your salary, then you're a tough guy, and then you're going to go and play. That's not going to fly. So if he's got legitimate concerns about playing, then I can understand that. But if those concerns go away, if they win the face-off with the CBA, no, no, no. Fans are completely going to just destroy them for that.
Yeah, I mean, if it's the health, it doesn't matter if they paid you the entire season.
Right, exactly. Right, if you're concerned about living and dying, does it really matter if 10% of your salary is going to be increased or not? No, you're not going to go. And a lot of these ball players have enough money that if they've got to wait the whole year, they'll be able to do it. But meanwhile, you know, John Q. Public out there that pays your salary doesn't have the same luxury. All right, he's got to work, otherwise he can't feed his family. You know, and if you're saying, "Oh, it's a safety issue," but increase my salary by 10-15%, well, then I'll go out there. Then it's a money grab, and there's no way you can get up from that. And the owners look bad too, but the owners don't have faces the way the players have faces. You saw that after the strike in 94, Michael, right? The owners were just as involved in that as the players were. It was the owners that canceled the season. So when they were throwing dollar bills at Bobby Bonilla, because that they know the players, they recognize the players. So who is going to end up losing the court of public opinion? They already hate the Wilpons. What does it matter? They'll hate the players.
The players always lose. For some reason, the players always lose. The public always takes the side of the billionaires over the millionaires, which I never understood, but they do. Now, to think that playing games without fans has no effect whatsoever. Listen to Adrian Wojnarowski, who said that if there are no fans in the stands for the playoffs in the NBA, that's less money for NBA players. Here's Woj.
Fans, they generate about 40% of the league's revenue, and that the players and the owners are going to have to sit down here. And the collective bargaining agreement, as Silver said on that call, it was not built to withstand or endure a pandemic. When the revenue is down, the players' salaries are going to go down, and that's a negotiation, the collective bargaining that the two sides are going to have to work out here over the next several months, because they've got to go through things like how it's going to impact the salary cap and luxury tax, how those things are going to shape those important issues around the league. But he made it clear to the players, you're going to make less money.
Now, it's funny because when you're in a sport that you get paid on revenue sharing, you have to accept it as a fact of life. Mm-hmm. Major League Baseball players are going to say, we don't have our salaries predicated on revenue sharing, so why all of a sudden should we? But if the owners are willing to open their books and do this for this one-off, this 1 year, then why isn't that workable? I just don't understand why that would be workable. And I understand the players say, if we go to court, we should have been paid every single dime that was on guaranteed contracts, even if there wasn't one game played, because the verbiage in the deal is you get paid your money if a schedule comes out. And the agents say a schedule came out. It doesn't say anything about games being played. But if you went to court on that, in front of an American public that's having close to 20 to 30% unemployment and they can't pay their bills, players are going to be reviled. Again, the owners are in the ivory tower. They're faceless, nameless for the most part. Right. The players are the ones that are out there. They're going to receive all the vitriol. Do they want to deal with that?
And can the sport survive it? I mean, one of the reasons that Rob Manfred wants to make all these changes is because he sees a decrease in the interest in the sport, especially among the younger fans. Tick them off. And right now, football's the big winner, right? Because luckily for them, with the timing of everything, this pandemic's been dominated by them. Their best player in the sport changed teams. They had the draft and free agency. So they're going to just dominate, and there's going to be even more interest. If we have compelling NBA and NHL playoffs, and baseball sits there and doesn't do anything, Michael, how do you get up from that? There's already going to be the post-pandemic world of how the finances are going to be distributed and how much money people are going to have. But when you're talking about trying to win people over and spend their money, are they going to want to spend money on something that got greedy?
I think the sport is great. The fans are the fans. It came back after they canceled the World Series in 94. So it might take a long time. And there are other extenuating circumstances that would lead you to believe that sports are going to have a difficult time moving forward. There's not going to be the disposable income that there was before. There are people that are out of work. They're broke. They can't pay their rent. So if sports did come back and there were fans allowed, there are people that are going to be trying to catch up on their debt. Maybe they don't have disposable income. Maybe restaurants are going to be hurt that way as well. Maybe you just cook meals at home rather than go out for a special night. Things are going to change. We have to accept that.
Yeah, they're probably going to have to lower ticket prices to entice people to come back. We'll find out if the television contracts, when they get renewed, whether the money will be there for that, because a lot of the companies may not have the advertising revenue to put into television, regardless of how high the ratings are. Are people going to be able to buy the $250 jersey that they normally go out and get, or the hat, the cap that they buy every year for their favorite team, and the pennants and all the things that they spend on? Is it going to be there? I mean, it's been only 2 months, Michael, and look how it's devastated the economy. And if you're talking that we're starting to reopen, we just, I guess Cuomo, they just said that the Finger Lakes in the North Country is going to be opening up by Friday because they're not as densely populated, and you're going to start to see things happen again. But if God forbid, we've got to go through this again in October or November, if it comes back and it spikes again and we've got to shut down again, Michael, I don't know when our economy is going to get to the point it was before. So are people going to have the disposable income to drop $200 to go to a Yankee or Met game?
Well,
or a
Rangers so many game? There's just so many variables about whether the country will be open, and then if it's open, will you spend the money?
So what you do is what Adam Silver is doing, is saying we have to open up the CBA. We got to attach it to revenue. That means the owners are going to have to open their books, and they're going to say whatever the revenue is, we've got to agree to share it. So if it plummets, we plummet together. If it rises, we rise together. But there shouldn't be one sacrificial lamb while the other one sits there and laughs because their contracts are guaranteed. Because I know these are billionaires, and nobody feels sorry for billionaire owners, Peter. But they're the ones that are losing because their money's not guaranteed. You know, so when if they get the television hit and they get the hit at the gate, they end up losing money. So why can't they just agree that during this pandemic, at least temporarily, why don't we just share whatever revenue there is?
Because there's simply no trust on either side, and that's what's scary. They better get some trust or they will not have a sport.
Then what I would say to the owner is, an owner, you don't have a kick coming if you're going to sit there and say, you can't see my books. If you really want to win the trust of the players and you want to get something done, then you're going to have to open your books.
Michael, K-Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Joe in Howard Beach. Joe.
Hi, Mike. Hi, boys. How you doing?
Good. Hey. How are you?
Before I go to my point, I'd like to tell you that I'm still up at Sloan getting my treatments, immunotherapy, and chemo from the 9/11 towers. Mm-hmm. You guys are great for me, man, because I come home after a rough day at Sloan sometimes, and you guys, you like pull me through, man. You're really good to me, and you know, it means a lot. It means a lot. It's just like if you live alone and you got guys like you and Colin. But my point is, you're talking about Jordan. I worked 30 years as a doorman in the village, and there's a bar on our block, the Gotham Bar, that When the Bulls came into town, a lot of them would hit this place. And they had a nickname for Pippin. There was no Tippin' Pippin, they call him. And Jordan, he would go in once in a while with Amar Rashad because Amar Rashad was living right up the block. But when Jordan came in my building a few times, you could see that the man was all business type of guy. He didn't want no part of regular people. And you could just see that that's the way he was. You know, he wasn't. And then you were told after a little while, you know, don't talk to him. Don't say anything to him. Don't even ask him if he wants a cab or not. And that's the way I treated the guy. But you could see that if he had to wait, say the person that he was doing business with at the time wasn't there, he'd have to wait. He'd get very annoyed. And if somebody asked him for an autograph in the lobby, he wouldn't sign for it. He wouldn't sign.
Wow. Right.
Yeah, and talking about good people, I mean good people that I've dealt with, Peter, this is on your end there, the two nicest people I ever met in the thing were from the music world. One was Miles Davis, and he talked to me about Elizabeth Taylor and how he'd go to parties with Elizabeth Taylor's house, and he was – You know, this was towards the end. He was having a lot of trouble. He was coming to my building for acupuncture. Cicely Tyson used to bring him. And I'd wait with him outside so nobody bothered him until his car came. But he was a very, very funny man. And another gentleman that lived in my building with his wife, who was a director in Hollywood, Michael Diamond. His name was Mike D. He was from the Beastie Boys. Mm-hmm. And this guy was down to earth. I mean, if he had these beautiful tickets for the Knicks, and if he was out of town or they were doing a show or something, he'd give you the ticket. He'd say, hey, this guy go, take your kid, take that. And the thing was,
it's nice. It's certainly nice to hear those stories. And, you know, I never, ever want to get inside the soul of somebody who's as famous as Michael Jordan. If you engage every single person that wants to talk with you. I mean, he did say, I guess it was in episode 5, he stayed in his hotel room. He couldn't go out in public.
Do you see the videos? Like, when they show him just going to games, the fanfare to go downstairs.
Yeah. I don't feel sorry for the guy. What a life he's had. But there's a price to pay. If you go into a place and you're going to engage every fan that wants to talk to you, because for that fan, that's the most important thing in the world. He can't do it for sheer numbers. He would have he wouldn't have time to put a morsel of food in his mouth. He just can't. Now, you've got to put up walls sometimes. But then you see him, you know, when Scott Burrell's friends were in the locker room, how friendly he was to them. Now, the camera was rolling, but, you know, I've heard he's great with kids and stuff like that. I've been around famous athletes. If they engage everyone that wants to engage with them, they wouldn't have a life.
It's impossible.
And he's... You know, he's
beyond that.
He's unlike almost anyone. You know, Jordan is in that, like, that Michael Jackson sort of crazed, Princess Diana. I mean, it's the highest category, basically, of celebrity that's ever existed.
Where Muhammad Ali, probably.
Yeah, I think Ali, too. We're everywhere on planet Earth, you're a celebrity. There aren't that many. LeBron, I think, is there, too. But, like... You know, there's a world, as huge as Kevin Durant is, there are places in the world in which Kevin Durant could have a meal and people aren't staring at him.
Right.
Maybe they'll look at him because he's so tall. But Michael Jordan was at a point where there's no place to have a meal. Nothing, ever. So there are plenty of reasons to watch this show and kind of come away questioning whether he's a bad guy, but it's hard to fault him for that stuff.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show? Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
And now with another tale from the crib.
Come to my house, I have a rib.
Here's Michael K.
I'm going to go all the way back to 1985.
85.
I'm working at the New York Post.
Okay.
And I'm in Lexington, Kentucky. With Steve Serby and Peter Finney Jr. Steve and I are doing sidebars for the Villanova Georgetown game. So Peter is doing the game story. It was one of the greatest sporting events I've ever been to, and the whole week in Lexington was just one of the most fun events I've ever had a chance to cover. I actually was interviewed by some people after the game because... my sports editor, Greg Gallo, who we spoke about in the past, had me time every single possession that Villanova had the ball. And whether or not they were trying to slow it down against Georgetown, and Georgetown was the decided favorite in the game.
It's sort of like what you had the interns do with Don's Talking.
Exactly. But this, you know, I was just a kid then, just a young, spunky 24-year-old, and I would do whatever was told to further the cause of the New York Post. But here's the crux of the story, and it's a record that stands today. And it's a record that I don't believe, I think it's unbreakable, as was, as is Cy Young's record, as is Cal Ripken Jr.'s record. These are records that cannot be broken. They just can't. So after the game, Steve Servi and I are lying on the floor of Rupp Arena, and we had one seat at the table, and that Peter Finney Jr. is up there writing the game story. And I wrote 13 stories that were in the Post the next day. 13 bylines.
Come on.
A record that will never be broken. Go look it up. And it's something I'm proud of to this day. 13 stories. I kept spitting them out because Greg Gallo had a theory. Always look busy. The more bylines you have, the busier you look, the harder you look like you're working. Pounded out 13 stories.
Wow.
Wow, you've been a kiss ass for a long time.
What does that mean?
You know, how do you make yourself look good to your employers? You have drops where you say it. I reward my employers.
I do. You know how I give a little extra? I work really hard. That's right.
Here's my question. What could these 13 stories have been about?
Oh, so many things.
Sex.
Some of that.
What else?
A little bit more.
But seriously, so you write a game story.
No, I didn't write the game story.
You didn't even write the game story.
No, I just did sidebars. So John Pannone's brother was on the team on the bench. John Pannone was a really good player for Villanova. He didn't win a title. This kid did as a reserve. The trainer for Villanova, I forget his name right now. He was an older gentleman in a wheelchair. He was suffering from Lou Gehrig's disease.
Okay.
That was like, they kind of dedicated the game to him.
Okay.
I talked with him.
All right.
I talked to families and said, go look it up, Peter. It was a tour de force.
Well, you know what? I don't have a microfiche here. Am I able to find all 13 stories?
Well, you know what? Then get yourself Nexus Lexus and find out.
There you go. Now,
wow.
I sent this to Michael, Peter, on Saturday. Tony Page was nice enough, because he used to work over the Daily News, so he says all these old copies, sent me...
But that was the Post.
The Post, excuse
right.
me, of the Dave Winfield article that Michael was talking about having to pay for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason Tony sent it to me, because he had just dug it up, and he loved the coif of hair that Michael had in his picture.
Oh, great coif.
But I just assumed that Tony had heard the segment and then
sent
it to me.
Oh, he didn't hear the segment.
It
oh,
was
really?
Just, it was just sheer coincidence that just a few days after you told the story, he sent me the article.
That's weird. I thought that he heard the segment.
No.
I assume everybody listens to the show.
So how wow. weird is that, Peter? It was
bizarre.
From 1988.
Wow. I can't believe that you say doing one's job is sucking up to your boss.
13
Isn't that what doing one's job is?
But you said make sure you always look busy because you look good to your boss.
No. He said make sure you always look busy.
Right, but that resonated
with you.
You
look good to the public.
You.
Well,
but
here's what you need to know, Peter. Here's the question you need to ask.
Right.
13 bylines, a record from what we understand.
Right.
Was that done just because the game was so awesome and Michael is such a professional, or did he figure that this is really going to impress the boss?
You know what?
Second.
Well, no, you're wrong. I'm going to tell you why. That's one of the biggest upsets in sports history. It's in the top 10. Now, number one might be, Soviet Union, United States. But this is in the top 10. Nobody expected Georgetown to lose to Villanova. How dare you question
Patrick
me?
Patrick Ewing's last game, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. 1985, got drafted a few months later.
You know what? I believe that today might be the last Tales from the Crib. Because I don't need to be abused. Because Tales from the Crib is about telling stories about myself. And if I do that, then it looks like, oh, it's terrible. Oh, he's talking about himself. Well, it's about me.
The level of abuse you get telling Tales from the Crib is not even remotely close to the abuse I get from my top five.
But that's all part of the act. This isn't part of the act. Peter disdains me.
That's also not true.
Well, he wants to play the side of people that are not completely impressed with your stories.
Yeah,
now,
that's right.
We want everything covered.
This isn't about me, but this is amazing. So listening to the show is the great, and Peter has him at number one right now, Jeff Passan.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
So he heard me question Sam Darnold, whether or not Gase's kid really solved a Rubik's Cube.
Let me guess. Jeff says he can do it.
He's got his 11-year-old son. He sent me a video. His son solves a Rubik's Cube. How long do you think he solves the Rubik's Cube?
8 minutes.
How long do you think it takes him?
58 seconds.
Don?
8 minutes.
20 seconds. He's got the video to show me.
No.
Yeah.
That's a scam.
Don can't even add up what a record would be if he played 7 doubleheaders.
The Yankees have played 7 doubleheaders this year, Don and Peter. That's 14 games. What do you think their record is?
6-1.
Then there has to be a cheat code to it then.
Well, like, yeah.
How do you do it in 20? I mean, listen, I'm sure his son is brilliant, but 20 seconds, Peter.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen it. Like this.
What do you mean you've seen it?
Well, there's this rapper Logic, who's a weird guy in his own right, although really nice guy and talented.
But, well, if he's weird, then why he should have illogic?
No, he's not illogical, I don't think. But anyways, he's a really talented, great rapper. Honestly, I believe. He got obsessed with Rubik's Cubes, and he used to have this dude around him. Of all the weird things I've seen rappers like have with them at their shows, he brought this dude around all the time, like a party trick. And I was backstage and saw this guy do that in like 20 seconds, boom, over and over again. He could just like, he had like a bunch of Rubik's Cubes constantly. That's just like what they do. I think, Don, you're right. There is a cheat code, but we're still too stupid to figure it out.
Yeah, like even knowing the cheat code is just way above our pay grade.
Right, like you could explain the cheat code.
Then I wouldn't know.
But people like you and I who are barely functioning, we wouldn't be able to do it.
So I just texted to Jeff. I said, Don says it's a scam. He doesn't believe it.
Okay.
And he said, Don's not the one who has to come to terms with the fact that his 11-year-old son is already much smarter than him. I am.
Oh, I don't doubt that. I'm sure Marco's smarter than me in some ways. But I'm not sure
exactly. Why do you have to add in some ways?
What this gift will do. Like people that can solve a Rubik's Cube in 20 seconds, what does that extrapolate out to
do? I think you could take over the world. And here's another thing. I mean, we're going to lift the curtain here.
Go ahead.
So I just gave a great tout to Sam Darnold. Now, those on TV heard it, about what show to watch.
Right.
And I usually call it Craps Creek.
Right. And I say Dina Lipschitz Creek.
Right.
Yeah.
But RJ, because he has to worry about his job, had to dump it.
Honestly.
Yeah.
I think, like, I understand RJ's concern. And because I
so do I. Because and I've never said it before.
I believe management would back RJ on dumping it. But
yeah,
technically, I don't think it's a swear word. It's spelled different. It just sounds like the actual swear word. But and I've talked about this before, Michael, because it's a Canadian show. It's from the CBC. So I'd watch, you know, Hockey Night in Canada. They'd say it. I think you can say it.
So at least people know what I'm talking about. Blanks Creek, like up a paddle. Up Blanks Creek without a paddle.
Right.
But I got to tell you this. Have you seen all five seasons, Don?
Yes, I watched. It's on Pop here in the States, so I watched it.
And correct me if you think I'm wrong. It's moving.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny.
It's moving. I never got to the moving part.
Oh, my God. It's unbelievably moving. It's,
really?
Yeah. It's so incredibly acted and cast. I mean, I don't know if they won any Emmys, Don. Maybe you follow this stuff. It is so brilliantly written. It's Eugene Levy and his son, David Levy, who are both in the show, both of the stars. Catherine O'Hara's in it, and a woman who plays Eugene Levy's daughter, I don't know her name, just brilliantly cast. I mean, there's Chris Elliott's in it. It's one of the best things I've ever seen on TV. I'm just starting the final season. That's how good it is.
Well, I forget what the Emmy equivalent is in Canada, but it's won a bunch there. And I think it was back in April. I showed Peter when it happened. TV Guide rated it the best show on television for I guess 2019.
Really? I could see why. Did I just finished the 11th, the fourth season?
Hmm.
The one that finished with the Christmas show?
Yes.
I got tears coming down my eyes.
Wow. No, it is terrific.
I didn't make it. So I've been watching it sort of slowly over time. I haven't made it to the part where it's gotten emotional.
Oh, it's emotional. Because the basis of the story, everybody, is these people were ridiculously wealthy. The people that took care of their money embezzled all their money. Now they're dirt poor. They have to move to a town that the father actually had bought for the son as a goof for a birthday. And this is the only place they can go, and they stay in a really run-down, ratty motel. And these people are living on top of the world, millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Now they have nothing. And it's their struggle, and it shows you how they get better as people. Don't you agree, Don? They become better people.
Chris Elliott's the mayor of the town, which is hilarious.
Chris Elliott's tremendous.
And his name is the name that you can't say.
And why is he always the same sort of bad guy?
Yeah,
he's not a bad guy in this. He's just dumb.
But either bad or dumb or, you know, misleading or whatever it may be.
But I think they're kind of smart, Peter, in the sense that the first couple of seasons are probably mostly funny, and then as it wears on, it gets
excellent
a little bit more serious because you start to get to know the characters and all that. So it's really
I'm late in season one. It's all jokes.
Yeah,
I will tell you this: Jody and I watched the first two episodes together. Jody gave up on it, but Don had raved about it so much. I said I got to dive deeper, and I did, and I can't stop. And now Jody has rejoined it, and she loves it.
You should have told her no.
Oh, you know what?
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
That's right, man.
Don't miss Michael, Don, and Peter weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. Or look for us under Listen on the ESPN app.